Hi, and welcome back to the Fire Belgium Show. My name is Sebastian Aguilar, and I'm here to help you take control of the finances so that you can live more and give more. Today, I want to talk to you about your broker account and specifically how to select the right brokerage account. This is a very important step, obviously, in the journey of an investor, of an index investor. And I think it is something that sometimes is underestimated in terms of how important it can be. For example, I know of an investor who had to pay up to 70,000 euros in fines for not managing their tax on transactions because they had picked the wrong broker who was not doing that for them. And that investor had only 50,000 euros, I think, in his portfolio. That was both misunderstanding of how taxes in Belgium work, which we're going to cover in another episode, but also the wrong choice of broker. And there are brokers that are advertised to investors in Belgium that do not deal with taxes, for example, and many beginning investors might be investing for a while using those, and that could lead to high penalties. And so it is a very important topic. And in today's episode, we're going to cover the key criteria that you have to assess for each broker before you select your brokerage platform. And obviously, costs are an important criteria, but it's not the only criteria. It's the one that we discuss the most, I would say, in the community. But I would say it's not the most important. There are more important criteria. And so we're going to cover those in details in this episode. All right, let's go. Right, so in today's episode, we're going to talk about how to select your broker. And before we actually dive into this, I just wanted to share a little bit about what happened in the past few months, because the podcast, as you might have noticed, has been put on hold for a while. And that's because I was traveling with my family and my kids got sick. They went to the hospital for a while and it was very difficult. So we had a bit of a challenging time in our family for a few months. My kids are still sort of sick, but they're getting better. So I'm back on the podcast and I will be back in the community in general, but it's been a difficult time. And we are very thankful that we had financial independence to be able to go through that time, because we didn't have to worry about going back to work, our employer, our colleagues or anything. And we didn't have to worry about money, and we just do what's right for our kids and for our family. And so we took a break to focus on what matters. And Fire Belgium is important to me, but it comes after my family. And so I basically put everything else on hold apart from the really strong commitments I have to the people who take my index investing online course. And so for those people, I was providing all support as promised, but everything else was put on hold. But we're back now, and there's a lot of topics I want to cover in the podcast. There's a lot of things we want to do in the community. And we have new support in the team, new members in the team that I will present to you, introduce to you soon. So a lot of exciting stuff. Anyway, so that's just a quick update on me and Fire Belgium. Let's dive into the topic of how to select your broker. So often when people start index investing, the main questions they ask is, what should I invest in and what's the best platform to start, right? And the best platform, often people then respond, this is the cheapest broker. And they point to a few different brokers. And nowadays, there are brokers that offer very attractive rates and often the free transactions or very low-cost transactions. And some of those brokers are well-regulated, but some are not, or they have other practices to make money, because basically, when they don't charge for transactions, then what do they make money from? Where do they make money from? And it has to come from somewhere. And in some cases, it goes against the interest of the investor. So cost is one thing. We talk about it a lot in the community, but it's not the only thing. Actually, for beginner investors, it's important to really understand index investing, the philosophy, asset allocation, risk capacity, risk tolerance, taxes, and other legal obligations, and then build. Beginner investors need to build their investment plan before they think of a broker account. I would say a brokerage account is something that we need but can be changed. So amongst all of the things that we do in index investing, that is one aspect that is fairly flexible. It does involve some cost to change, but it's not impossible. And so it's important, but it's not a massive deal, as this is not the main thing, basically. To support beginners investors, I have developed a workshop that's available for free on the website, and you can go and check. And in that workshop, I explain basically what is the optimal trajectory, the optimal path to learn how to invest in index funds in the optimal way in Belgium. And I provide resources, and also I point you in the direction of support. If you want to work with me to learn how to invest in index funds, then I provide a lot of support there as well. And so that's something you can find on the website. All right, there's four main criteria to select your broker. The first criteria is not costs. It is security and safety. So the safety and security of your assets, the safety and security of your account is the most important aspect, because that is where, if it's not right, you could lose it all, right? And that could be through something negative happening to the broker. It could be through the broker not doing what it's supposed to be doing. It could be through hacking. There's basically a bunch of ways you could lose all of it if you selected the wrong platform. There are platforms that are like outright scam and fraud that exist and that are available to people in Belgium, and they're actually marketed and advertised online and even pushed onto people, you know, fairly aggressively. And these are certainly not the platforms we want to be working with. We want something that is safe, reliable, reputable. So security is the first and most important criteria. You don't want to be involved in something like a Ponzi scheme, like there was in 2008 with Madoff, where thousands of investors lost billions of euros. And so the Belgian authorities, the FSMA, they are tracking, and they are looking for, like, they are working on identifying frauds and scam, and you can find them on their website. That's important. Now, how to protect your investments? There are a few key elements to maximize the protection of your investment. First, you want to select a broker that is well regulated. So that means you want a broker that's regulated in Belgium or in one of the, you know, serious European countries. You don't want something regulated offshore on an island. You know, avoid things like Malta and Cyprus, Cayman Islands, or the other places like this, Bermuda Islands and Triangle, whatever. No, just focus on, like, find brokers that are basically approved by authorities of governments that we trust mostly, which would be Belgium and the countries around here. Now, this is mandated by those regulators in most European countries. That is asset segregation. Asset segregation is when your investments are not held on the balance sheet of the broker, of the platform. The platform is really just an intermediary, and you remain 100% the owner and the legal owner. It's like it's on your name of the shares of ETFs that you are investing in. And the broker is really just sort of a registry that helps you make the transaction and keep track of who owns what, right? But it's all held on a separate account in a separate institution. And in case of broker bankruptcy, the brokers don't even have access to those assets. And so your investment remains yours. Now, this is mandated by the regulators in Europe, but it could happen with non-well-regulated platforms that this is not the case. There is also a few exceptions, maybe with some brokers, where at certain point in time, there might be assets that are not on the custodian account, but in their own accounts. So that's something to keep an eye out for as well. Now, thanks to this mandated asset segregation and your money being on custodian accounts, then you're protected from broker bankruptcy if you pick a good broker. So basically, that's, you know, just to give you peace of mind. A lot of people are wondering what happens when the broker goes bankrupt. And for most brokers, there is absolutely no issue because your assets are held in a separate account. Now, you also want to pick a broker with good reputation. And that is because there can be fraud and mismanagement. And this is something that I have looked into a lot, because I'm always looking for, okay, what is the worst that can happen? And how can we protect ourselves against that? And this is so fraud and mismanagement is not something that happens often, right? And investors losing all their investments when the money isn't in a trusted broker and a trusted broker's account or reputable is extremely rare. The worst case scenario would be a broker going bankrupt and the management actually having committing fraud and mismanagement, and that or on purpose building something like a Ponzi scheme, like Madoff did. And there's obviously a lot of layers of protection by the regulators for that not to happen. But the one thing that we can do as investors is to basically look for regulatory protection, but also keep an eye out for things that might indicate that management, you know, the way they deal with things isn't always in the best interest of the investors. So to me, good reputation of the broker is important. And there are some brokers that just seem to demonstrate a better approach to that, basically. And that does not protect us from fraud and mismanagement, but it puts us on that side because we don't know exactly how everything is going on inside the broker. But that is just one more approach, one more criteria we can use to increase the security of our investments. Now, you also want your account to be highly secured in terms of the access to the account. At the beginning of the internet and of all this stuff, you simply need a login and password, and that is not sufficient anymore. So if your investment account is access is simply through login and password, then you have to change that, either ask for a better sign-in option. So nowadays, it has to be at least two-factor or two-step identification. So that would be through a DigiPass with a specific code and a card, or through a notification app. Certainly, you need at least two steps. And one of the methods that has been used by many brokers, and I think is disappearing now, is using just a text message being sent to your phone and then a code that you would put on the platform to log in. And I would say that's from all the two-step identification system, that's the least safe because a text message could be intercepted. So you would want to prefer something with the DigiPass or the It's Me app or basically an encrypted notification app. I mentioned that there are some cases where it seems that the broker, when we're talking about asset segregation, that the broker might bring assets back onto the platform. It seems that this can happen if the broker is actually lending your securities. Now, security lending on its own has a certain level of risk, but it's a common practice for the ETF, for the fund managers to do that, to increase the performance of the ETFs, so the funds. And depending on the fund manager, some of these returns are shared with the investors to a certain proportion. It depends on the fund management. But most brokers don't actually do security lending, and some do. And when they do, it seems that they have to bring back the assets on their side, so it's not in the custodian account anymore. And so I think that increases the risk a little bit for the investors, which is not something we need. Like, as index investors, if we want to take more risk, we don't take platform risk like that. We're not going to try to get 0.1 or 0.2% extra return by allowing our broker to lend our securities, if anything at all comes right from that. If we want to get more returns, we simply increase our asset allocation risk towards stocks. And so that's how we manage risk and reward. We don't want to take risk in other areas. So generally, we would prefer brokers that do not lend our securities, right? For those two reasons. But it's another aspect of the security of investments. Okay, so I've spoken about asset segregation and the broker having to keep your money in a custodian account, and also about fraud and mismanagement. Now, there is an actual extra layer of protection in case there is fraud and mismanagement, and that is the guarantee and protection funds, right? So the guarantee protection funds are funds that have been put in place by the Belgian government, mandated by the European Union based on a directive, and that basically protects cash and savings accounts up to 100,000 euros per person and per institution. That's by the guarantee fund. And then the protection fund protects up to 20,000 euros per person and per institution of investment funds. So if it's cash or savings, then it's 100,000. And if it's investments, then it's 20,000. Now, that amount is quite low, but it's something that has been set up a long time ago. And there's been multiple attempts to update this regulation, but it is just what it is right now. And this is something that kicks in only in the case where your assets are not, we're not able to recover your assets after platform bankruptcy, broker bankruptcy, which happens very, very, very rarely. So just to give an example, I actually checked the data from the Guarantee Protection Funds for 2021, and there was no requests to use any of that fund. This fund has a lot of money in it, 40 million euros, I believe. And there was no request to get any money out of that to cover the losses of something. Now, I haven't checked it for every single year in the past, but it doesn't happen very often, right? And it's not meant to happen very often. And there's a statement by the FPS Finance of Belgium that says, it is important to draw attention to the important legal protection a client benefits for the securities he has entrusted to his financial institution. Indeed, the customer remains the legitimate owner of his titles and has the right of direct claim to them, on them. This means that the securities must be returned by the curator and therefore can never fall into the bulk of the assets of a possible bankruptcy, right? Now, an intervention on the part of the protection system should only be considered if, after the returns of all available securities, customer would not have been able to recover some of their assets. Such case should only occur in the event of administrative errors and other irregularities. So it's very rare, and there are multiple layers of protection before this, right? But still, in case, if ever, and it's very rare again, it happens, then there's still some, there's a protection fund. I think that's all for security of your investments. Now we're going to talk about access and then convenience and finally cost, because the four main criteria for selecting your broker to me are security, access, convenience, so ease of use, and then finally cost. So access is an important criteria because basically you want the broker that you pick to give you access to the stuff you want. You also want that broker to be available to you as an investor, right? So brokers have restrictions or criteria when they allow clients to become clients. So you want basically to pick a broker that lets bedroom residents, if that's your case, basically that lets people like you access them as clients. And then you want the broker to give you access to the correct exchanges, the stock exchanges where you will be buying your investments. And finally, you want the broker to give you access to the investments you want to buy on those exchanges, right? So this is common sense, but we don't really talk about this very much. And sometimes some brokers just don't give you access to the ETFs you actually want to invest in for multiple reasons. One of those reasons is sometimes that they don't have certain, sometimes they just don't have the ETF listed on the list of available securities. And you can ask for it to be added. And sometimes they have it, but it's not available for you to invest in it because they don't have the key investor information document that is supposed to go along with it in one of the national languages in the country where you live. Anyway, so what I'm getting at is that before you open an account immediately with something that you've been recommended, figure out what you want to invest in and just shoot them an email and ask, or call them and ask if they have it. That's just so that you don't have to go through the whole process of opening and closing if they don't have access to, don't give you access to the ETF you want to invest. Now, most of the ETFs that us index investors in Belgium like to invest in are available on most of the main platforms that we use. So it's a rare occurrence that this doesn't happen, but there are examples of people who took the course, so some of my students who wanted a specific ETF from the list of ETFs that we discuss in the course, and it just wasn't available with the brokerage account that they had open before joining the course, for example, right? So they would then have to open a new brokerage account and it would be there if they would check that it's there, and then they would open the account. So anyway, access is an important aspect. The third aspect is convenience, right? So you want a brokerage account that you will actually use properly and that will do certain things for you if you want that, to avoid certain mistakes. So for example, you want a good user experience, you want a good customer support so that it can help you solve problems that you may have, and you may want, and I would recommend that you use that, is a broker that deals with the investment taxes for you, right? And that is because taxes, when not done properly, can lead to high fees, which is the example I gave at the very beginning of the episode. The investor came to me and said, hey, this is my situation and I've made all of these transactions, but I don't have a broker that deals with taxes in Belgium, and I've been doing this for a few years. And we did the math and it came like the, you know, 70,000 euros in penalties for a portfolio that was just 50,000 euros. So it's very important. Anyway, I keep saying this because I don't want to mislead beginners, right? And all of those of you who know about this, we're like, Sebastian keeps repeating himself. But basically, I don't want people to make these basic costly mistakes. So keep repeating it. So user experience is important because you want a broker that you can tailor to your own needs as an index investor. Some brokers are really complex. Obviously, most brokers actually are tailored to active traders because that's their main target. And as index investors, we only use a few features. The basic things basically is what we want. And what we want in a good broker would be to have the basics right and in a simple format where we can easily find what we need. So the ability of making a short list, ability of seeing a portfolio of like two or three ETFs max, and then being able to remove stuff that's not necessary. These are good things to have in a broker. Now, when it comes to the mobile app, often people want to have a mobile app because they want to be able to do the transaction or to check the portfolio on their phone. I don't think that is really necessary. And I would even say it's better to not have a mobile app. Even if it's available, I would actually uninstall it. And that is based on personal experience. At the beginning, I did have the mobile app and I was checking my investments and my portfolio quite often because it's easy. It's just like click, click, and I could have access to everything. And as index investors, we buy and we hold for the long term. We don't care what happens in the short term. We don't care where the markets are and where they're going next. So removing the app is actually something that helps staying sane, but also it helps you achieve your financial goals, which is not caring about the short term fluctuations of the market. So we know it's going to fluctuate. It's going to go up. It's going to go down. We don't need to be exposed to it all the time because it just plays against us, because our basically triggers emotions that we don't really need to invest well for the long term. So my recommendation is to generally just remove the app and do your transactions once a month, 2 months, once every quarter, whatever it is, on the computer. And so you just log in, do your transactions and log out. That's it. You don't need to look at it in between ever. So no mobile app for me, that's the way forward. I did mention customer support, and I think that's quite an important part. And it's not always easy to check in advance, but customer support is basically how you will get your problem solved when it comes to access to your broker, access to certain things, questions that you may have about specific ETF or specific features of the broker. So it's good to check it. And some brokers have better customer support than others. And I would say that the best service that you want is basically your phone number that you can call and have response fairly quickly, quite reliably, and someone helpful on the other side. And so what I like to do is just call them before I open an account and ask a bunch of questions. And like, first, I want the response to be fast and I want the answers to be helpful. And someone who's not trying to just quickly close a call, right? And get positive feedback. You want to just test that. Because often they have systems inside that set this up. And so it should be consistent, a good experience, hopefully consistently as you're a client of that broker. So I do recommend, you know, checking their FAQ, sending them an email, calling them. And if there's a broker that doesn't have a good customer support and you've experienced bad customer support, consider, you know, sometimes it's worth changing, because just the idea of not being able to deal with certain things, the day you have a real problem, you can't access something, there's a mistake in something on your account, you want to be able to fix that. So to me, that's really important. And then finally, not finally, it's still part of convenience, but the handling of your taxes. So tax management, brokers that are based in Belgium are registered in Belgium are supposed to deal with your taxes and do it all for you, right? And correctly. And so the main Belgian brokers, which at the moment, those that we use the most in the community are Bolero, Keytrade and Saxobank. They do deal with those taxes on behalf of the investor. And so here we're talking about the tax on transaction, tax on capital gains for bonds, the dividend tax. And so these are things that you have to, like, if the broker doesn't do it for you, you have to do it yourself. And the tax transaction, for example, is fairly complicated. And so it can be an obstacle on your journey to investing. And it can be, you know, if you don't do it well, there's heavy penalties. So again, picking a broker that deals with taxes is something that I certainly recommend to everyone, and especially beginners. In some very unique specific cases, it might make sense to pick one that doesn't deal with taxes because specific reason, but in 99.5% of cases, the recommendation is just get a broker that does it for you. It will just reduce a lot of the headaches. And finally, costs, right? So the fourth criteria for me is indeed costs. Now, costs are very important, but not all costs are equal. And so there's different kinds of costs that we need to look at. There's ongoing management costs or account costs or custody costs or account management costs. These are usually monthly fees, and they might basically charge a certain fixed amount or percentage of your portfolio each month. There is transaction fees, which is the cost that you pay when you make a transaction. There's real-time market data costs. So for active traders who want to have access to the latest data on the stock market, then they pay extra to get, you know, the latest data. And then there's the cost of transferring securities in and out of the account. So that's when you're moving your portfolio between brokers, for example. Now, any ongoing costs is where we want to pay most attention, because this is something that will be compounding over time, right? So the same way annual returns are compounding over time, annual costs that are a percentage of the total investment compound over time. That's why we pay attention to fees when we do index investing in the first place. That's why we like low TER ETFs. But that's also why we like low ongoing fee brokerage account. And so most brokers actually do not charge ongoing account management fees, and that's great. But some do. And sometimes it's not, we don't see it because the focus is so much on transaction fees, right? So most brokers will advertise low transaction fees. Some of them will have an ongoing fee that is not exactly, you know, very, very well explained in terms of what the impact would be. Now, low transaction costs and fees are important for active traders. It's very important to them because they will do a lot of transactions. For us long-term buy and hold investors, what's really important is just it's ongoing fees, because our portfolios get bigger and we don't have that many transactions, right? So make sure you check if there are any ongoing fees. And you can have accounts with zero ongoing fees and you want one of those. That is actually the main reason I changed brokers at some point. So I used to, when I started investing, I was working with Saxo Bank in the UAE. And at some point, they introduced an ongoing fee of 0.24% per year. So that was basically doubling my ongoing fee, because I had a TR from ETF of around 0.2. And then that was more than doubling it. And there's plenty of options where there's no such ongoing fee. And so I changed, right? So to me, that's a very, very valid reason to change brokers. So check it. And if you see that there's something there, it's worth considering changing. Now, transaction fees, yeah, they're specific to the amount of money that you're basically specific to the transaction itself. So how much the transaction is worth, where the transaction is taking place, so the stock exchange, and the specific security or type of security. It could change depending on whether it's a stock, an ETF, or something else. So that's something to check with your brokerage platform. And they have the tariff sheets and it's all there, right? So this is worth to keep an eye on. You don't want to pay excessive fees, but usually this has a lower impact over the, you know, your investment lifetime compared to ongoing fees. Now, it is still important when you have a very small portfolio to pay attention to these. And there's multiple ways you can optimize this, but certainly, you know, having low transaction fees helps, right? And then real-time market data is something that we just mentioned earlier. As index investors, we don't need that. It's something that traders would want to have a look at because they're investing in a much shorter time horizon. We have a very long time horizon. So it doesn't matter. The data you will have on your broker for free will be data from 15 minutes ago. And in most cases, that's completely, like, that's more than enough to make a transaction. You actually, you know, the original index investing approach was using mutual funds, which had one price per day. And so you would simply wire money and then buy that at the price of that day, and that's it. Now, because it's, you know, ETFs are on the stock market, then we are also, we have some of the features of stocks, which is, you know, a price that changes, you know, second after second, minute by minute. But as index investors, it doesn't matter. Whether you buy now or in an hour, we make tiny difference. Long term, it makes no difference. You don't want to pay anything to get the data exactly on what's going on right now. You just put a market order or an order with a limit that is a little bit above the data that the price of your transaction from 15 minutes ago, for example. And all what you want basically is just transaction to go through. That's it. That's pretty much it. And it doesn't matter that very much what price exactly on that specific day, as long as you get something, you know, around now, around the price of today. So you don't need to pay for real-time market data. In most cases, they might offer it to you, but in most cases, you don't even have to think about this too much. And then we have the cost of transferring securities. This is not something that happens very often, but once in a while, index investors want to change brokers because, for example, this be the introduction of an ongoing management fee. At that point, you'd think about, okay, how do I move my money, right? And there's two main ways to move your investment from one broker to another. And one way that most people understand is you sell everything, you transfer the cash back to the new broker, and then you buy again your portfolio. Now, that sometimes it's necessary if you move countries, and so you would change your portfolio anyway. You would have to sell everything and then buy again because you're buying different ETFs for tax reasons, for example. But if you're not moving countries, then and you're keeping all your ETFs, then you can transfer the ETFs from one broker to the new brokerage account. And that's something that they can do between the two of them. Your money stays invested, so there's no gap between, you know, there's no time period when you invest, your money is not invested in the market. And it's, for larger portfolio, is usually cheaper to do that than to sell everything and buy again, because then you would have to pay twice the transaction fees, and in Belgium twice the transaction taxes, which basically becomes a lot, right? So it's often very useful to simply move the ETFs from one broker to the next. The way charges and fees usually work in this case is you pay a specific price per line. So the more different type of investments, the more different ETFs or stocks you have on your portfolio, the more you'll pay, right? And it can be anything between 10 and 100 euros, sometimes more per line, right? So if you have a portfolio of two ETFs, then you pay 20 euro maybe. Some brokers will ask 200 for moving the ETFs out of the broker onto the new platform. Most brokerage platform will not charge you for you to bring ETFs in inside their platforms, but they will charge for you to move it out. And then the platform where you're moving towards might even have a budget, and that might be even something you ask. They might have money to help you pay for the outgoing transfer fees from the other broker, right? Because they're interested in attracting new investors, obviously. So check this out, obviously. Check two things. So the price of moving your portfolio out per ETF line can vary significantly, but usually max 100 euro per line. And then when you change to a new broker, check with them if they have money to pay for whatever transfer fees they might be. Yeah, because then you save a bit of money. So, right, that's pretty much it for, you know, to me, what the main criteria for selecting your brokers have to be. Now, what you can do is think about those criteria and assess the current broker you're using, or use those criteria to look at the different brokers that you're considering and compare them. Now, obviously, this is something that I have done, and I will be sharing the conclusion of my reviews of brokers for index investors in Belgium in a future episode. But that will take still some time, because we're still working on some of those brokers to get better details. And I'm getting help from a new team member of Fire Belgium. I'll tell you, for those of you who listen or watch the video till the end, Tone Kuipers joined the team recently, and he's been in the community very active, and he's been helping me with a number of things. He's joining also to launch the course, the index investing course in Dutch. So that's something that we have already worked on. We've run one course, and we're working on the next version. And he's helping me with research, for example, on brokers and ETFs, etc., different things. And so he has contributed to the knowledge that I've shared with you today, and he will be contributing to most of the podcast episodes in the future as well. It's great to have support, and because then we can do more and help you more. Right. And so again, if you're a complete beginner, make sure you check the website, check the other episodes of the podcast. On the website, there's the free workshop where I share, you know, the entire philosophy of index investing. And there you'll find more information on how to implement it and how you can get support from me to do that. And basically how to put into practice everything we talked about in the episode today and in most episodes of the podcast. If you like this episode, please, please leave a comment, leave a review on whatever podcasting platform, share with a friend. Would really appreciate it, because I realize if I don't ask for support like this, it doesn't happen very often. So at first I thought, you know, most of these podcasts ask for feedback, and, well, not feedback, but review, sharing, comments, likes, and all that jazz. And it's annoying, and I didn't really want to do that. But well, you know, now I realize if I don't ask, sometimes people don't really think about it. And I understand. So please take a second to, you know, just support the podcast if you found this useful. It really helps me, and it helps me help other people. So you, by doing that 1 second or 2 second thing, would help a lot of people. And then if you are on Apple iTunes, please leave a review. I would really appreciate it. Send it to me. I haven't had any yet. So if, you know, I might read the first ones when I get them. I'd be very happy. Right, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed. Let me know in the comments if you have any feedback, if you think I'm missing something, or if there's anything else you'd like me to cover. Let me know. Cheers, appreciate it. Take care. Bye.